Welcome to Step Into Magic, your weekly online radio show on how to develop your psychic ability, deepen your spirituality, and find your own true purpose, presented by acclaimed medical intuitive Josephine Lang. This broadcast is a part of the Wisdom and Intuition Network at metaphysicalwisdom.com. This is Anthony Taylor, your host, and on behalf of Josephine, I'll be taking your calls and questions. This week's topic is Sacred Circles of Women, a New Spirituality Arising. For those of you who are new to our show, Josephine has been a clairvoyant healer for more than 25 years. During that time, she's helped thousands of people from around the world to heal from hard-to-diagnose and chronic health issues. She has also been a teacher and spiritual mentor for hundreds of people who treasure her insights, courage, and love.
Hello, everyone. Today we're going to explore how women's spirituality circles are changing the world for the better, for all of us, and for all of life. But before I go into this topic in any detail, I'd like to begin our show with our spiritual agreement and with a couple of gratitudes. My darling Frank makes these beautiful slides for us, and he does such a wonderful job, and I gave them to him just maybe a half an hour before the show was starting. Well, I guess it was about an hour, and he was able to just get them done right away. And also thanks to Tony for his wonderful Alexander work that he does as well, because my voice feels so much stronger after my laryngitis every time he works with me and helps me with that. So thank you, Tony, and thank you, Frank.
Thank you.
Yeah. And so our spiritual agreement was a gift from my mentor and teacher, Jana Massey, and I'd love for you to all join me in this agreement, if you would. It goes like this. Together, we acknowledge that everything that we think, that we say, and that we do at this time will be of the highest good, and together we ask for truth, the understanding of that truth, and the wisdom to use it in our lives. Can you all agree?
I do.
Thank you.
Josephine, we've had several messages from our listeners this week. Perhaps I should just read out a few of the highlights.
Oh, that'd be lovely.
Okay. This one reads, I have to make popcorn now. The best show on the planet is about to begin. That's with love from Anna.
Oh, that's so beautiful, Anna. Thank you.
And this one, congratulations on all your excellent radio shows. You are an incredible blessing to our community, planet, and the whole universe.
Oh, my goodness.
Love from Melanie.
Oh, thank you, Melanie.
And this one from Rosa. I almost felt the mist on my face in New Zealand at the mud pots of the hot springs. How do you do that? You take us right to the point.
Oh, how nice.
Very nice.
That's, I guess, in reference to last week's show when we talked about parting the mists in New Zealand. Yes, wonderful. I'm so grateful, you guys. Thank you so much for writing in. Really nice to hear. Makes me feel really good. So our women's circles. This is a wonderful new movement that has begun around the planet, really. It's all across the globe, and it's where women are meeting together and sharing their deep hearts and their hopes and their truths and creating a sacred space or a sanctuary between them wherever they happen to be. And that is such an important thing. It's really helping us to learn how to empower ourselves, how to come forward as women standing in our truth and standing in our strength. And in my women's circles, that I'm so blessed to be a member of a number of women's circles, and I enjoy them all so thoroughly, and they all have different characters and different qualities. But there are a few things that tend to be consistent throughout the different women's circles, and one of them is that we usually start off with some sort of a purification ritual. One group that I know always uses the white sage, which is the Native American blessing plant that was here local to our area, sacred to the Chumash. And it's a beautiful sage plant. And when the leaves are dried, people will often take a branch and let the leaves dry close together to make like what they call a sage wand. And they might wrap it with a little string. Then they light the end of it and let the smoke waft over the woman as she arrives to the women's circle. Another circle that I have also uses the sage, and they just use a single leaf. They just take one little leaf, and they have a little rough ceramic bowl. It's a beautiful little bowl, and they just light the leaf on fire and then kind of wave it around a little bit like you do to blow out a match and drop it in the bowl, and the smoke comes up in a gentle little curling circle. And a lot of times we'll use a little feather bouquet, like a little group of feathers that somebody might have gathered. I have one that's made out of turkey feathers that a friend gave me, and I just love it. But I've seen some other feathers that are a little more, you know, elaborate, maybe some fluffy ostrich feathers or things that are shorter little pieces of those little downy feathers that are a little shorter feather. But it makes a nice little ability to kind of get the wind to move with the feathers. I've also seen people use in sacred circles, especially in the local indigenous people's traditions, to use part of a wing from a bird that may have, you know, lost its life on the side of the highway or something. And, of course, you have to obey the laws regarding, you know, using that sort of thing and that sort of more in the realm of those people who are allowed to use that, the local Native Indigenous people. But in any case, you can use that feather or that little ability to move the air to wave the smoke over the woman and allow herself to be purified with the smoke. Sometimes a woman will do it for a sister in circle, or sometimes we do it for ourselves. Sometimes the sage is sitting in a little abalone shell by the front door and you just light it and do it yourself. Or sometimes one woman will go around the circle and do everyone. And sometimes, too, we'll take turns and pass the sage from one woman to another and maybe whisper a little blessing. Perhaps you can show that slide there, Tony.
Certainly. And as I'm doing that, I'm wondering, is that the only purification ritual? Is it the sage one, or are there others?
Oh, no, there are others. And sometimes we'll use cornmeal. It's another one that we use. I've used water from a local hot springs. Some time ago, Frank brought me a beautiful container full of water from Fern Spring in Yosemite, and I've used that. You might just sprinkle it lightly over the woman's crown. Or sometimes you can just use your intention. And this little slide here is about that.
Mm-hmm.
So one woman might say to another woman as she's blessing her or helping her with the purification, "May beauty be before you, beside you, behind you, above and below you. May you walk the beauty way." Or they may say something like, "You know, I so appreciate your big heart and the way that you care for everyone in community." And, you know, just something like a blessing to just sort of help that woman come into a sacred space within herself and enter into the circle. And when all the women have been saged or smudged or purified in this way, we consider the circle to be closed. That closes the circle. It creates a sacred space. And some of my women's circles will actually draw a little door or a window with our hands if we have to step out to go to the restroom or something.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of a fun thing to do. So it's lovely. So, and then another thing that sometimes happens is we will proclaim, "Now we are in sacred space." And that's a nice thing because it sort of sets the tone. And then when we are together as women in a circle, we can share our goals and our griefs and our loves and our inspirations and our desires. And we really get the ability to stand in our power in what's true for us. And this is how women are rising around the world. This is how women are claiming their power for themselves. You know, for so long, women have been excluded from religion and from government. And, you know, who knows why? Perhaps it's due to children rearing or I don't know. But I do trust the universe. And I find that the pendulum does swing. And I remember hearing, reading actually, and I think it was in a National Geographic in a doctor's office, you know, I think it was a chiropractor's office, that the Leakey family, that famous archaeological family, had discovered some footprints that were set down in mud some 350,000 years ago. That's a long, long time.
That is a long time ago.
And they could determine by the footprints that that it was a woman who had left those prints in the mud, and they had turned to stone, of course, and that she had a similar cranium to what we have now and a similar body carriage to our current body carriage. And I thought that was so extraordinary. Basically, they were saying that there was a woman in this exact same body type as we have now back then. I thought, wow, that's a long, long time. And there's some pretty good evidence that this image that we sort of have of the caveman, you know, that sort of comical thing of the big club and drag the woman around by the hair, is a pure fallacy, that there's no such really reality behind that. And that probably what happened, actually, was more like there were 350,000 years of a matrifocal culture. And that word matrifocal is really an interesting word. Matra meaning mother, focal meaning more of a focus on the feminine, as opposed to, you know, patriarchal, which we are familiar with now.
Mm-hmm.
And the patriarchal, that archy, sort of refers to a crown or the arching over. It sort of has the feeling of the king or the dictatorial, do it my way, top-down sort of focus. The image of the triangle, you know, with the male god at the top, and then below that is the male family, head of the family, and then the wife, and then the kids, and then the pets, and then the plants, and then the dirt. And that's sort of the hierarchical structure. Versus instead that circle of equality that we're striving for in women's circles. And that's also what you see in a lot of indigenous cultures. People tend to sit in a circle. And there is some pretty good evidence that the ancient cultures from, you know, 350,000 years ago and up until about 10,000 years ago were had a lot of equality or else a slight female focus. There's, for instance, when the male archaeologists went into those cultures in Mycia and Minoa, they didn't necessarily see the female figurines as goddesses. They saw them as dancing girls or dakinis. And when the female archaeologists went into those cultures and saw those sites, the ancient artifacts from those sites, they thought, oh, no, wait, I think this is a goddess.
Mm-hmm. Certainly.
A little different look. Another example that I thought was so almost comical was that when the male archaeologists went into the caves and saw those astounding cave art examples from 30,000 years ago or so, they might see a couple of people standing up on the top of a cliff, and below was a herd of bison, perhaps, or some sort of animal there grazing. And they would see lines painted towards the animals, strips of lines. And the male archaeologists might think, oh, these guys were shooting arrows down on these animals. And then when the female archaeologists would walk into the same cave, they'd say, no, I think that's rain. Which I think is kind of funny. And, you know, there was evidence also that during those, what were probably most likely matrifocal years, that the females had, you know, what was probably the closest thing to ownership of property was that maybe a woman might harvest the same oak tree acorn every year. And then when she got older, she would pass that ability to harvest that particular tree onto her daughter or daughters. And sometimes the women in the burial sites, they would find that there was a tiny bit more stuff, but it wasn't like what happened later in the patriarchal times and later in history with the extreme riches being buried in the burial sites with the person who had passed. And so my feeling is that after 350,000 years of really not too much happening, because, you know, the women's way is a little more circular, a little more equality oriented, that, you know, when the patriarchal times came up, it was like, hey, you know, let's get something done around here. And so that's my feeling as to what has occurred in the past. And what I think was happening right now is I think that we're growing up a little bit and we're moving into the partnership way. And that's a wonderful book by Rhianne Eisler. She wrote The Chalice and the Blade. It's a beautiful look into our history and our future. I think that that's how we will be able to heal our communities and our families and our world. So those are two books that I like to recommend.
Well, to me, Joseph, it just seems to make so much sense, doesn't it? There are both women and men here. There's both a feminine and a masculine principle. And going too far in any one direction seems to spell disaster. It seems like life is constantly correcting itself. And it doesn't really want it to be either or. It seems it wants a both and.
Yes, I think so. And some of those cultures in the past were both and I think those were the really, really successful ones, like the Minoan and the Mycenaean culture. There's evidence of leadership in both genders there.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful cultures with very successful cultures. So There was a morning one day years ago. I just love this little story. And Frank and I were like, okay, so what are we going to do today? It's a Saturday. He's like, oh, let's fix the gate. Okay, great idea. Let's fix the gate. So I'm thinking, all right, well, first of all, I better get some breakfast made because we're going to need to do that. And then I better call that friend who left a message because it was kind of a serious problem they had. And maybe I'll just make the bed and tidy up a little bit. And so I just got all that done, and Frank comes in, you know, dusting his hands off. Okay, gate done. And, you know, he got to come in and enjoy a nice breakfast that I had there for him. But it really taught me that the male mode of being and the male mind can be very focused. You know, it's like, we're going to fix the gate. Okay, we're going to fix the gate. Here we go. And, of course, this is a very broad generalization, and many men have very feminine qualities in their mind, and many women have very masculine qualities in their mind, but just as a generalization. And it seemed like my female mind was a little broader in scope. It was like thinking, well, before I really commit myself to the job of the gate, I better tend to these other things that need to be done. And I've also noticed that sometimes when Frank and I are grocery shopping, you know, Frank goes into the store and it's a hunt. You know, it's like we're getting the this and the that, and we're getting kale and the whatever else it is, you know, and off he goes and gathers those things up quickly, and he's done. And I'm thinking, oh, this might be nice. Maybe we could use this Wednesday. We're going to have that gathering. And, oh, perhaps I should get a little bit of this because you never know when you're going to need that on hand.
Sounds just like Clary. I can't go shopping with her anymore.
It's kind of funny, isn't it? And when Frank and I put this together, we really saw the humor in it. And now we don't, you know, it doesn't bother us. Like, you go get these things and I'll browse over here. It works out really well. And there's a thing that happens to male babies when they're at the breast, nursing at the breast at 3 days of age. There's a burst of testosterone that happens for them. And that testosterone inhibits the growth of the corpus callosum, which is an area of the brain that is like a network, and it connects the left and the right hemispheres of the brain. And so it seems like what that function is that it places the male mind in either hemisphere, either in the left, sort of that hemisphere of doing an accomplishment and more linear, and or in the right, which is dreaming and artistic ventures. So there's a tendency in the male mind to be in either hemisphere more so than in the female mind, which is accessing both hemispheres a little more easily.
That's really interesting, because I'd really like to be able to have access to both at the same time. So I do notice that I'll flip from one to the other. I can be very much focused on, you know, I have a list, tick the things off the list, get that done. Or I can have times when I just want it all to be just free-flowing and whatever the next thing is, and just a little bit of this, a little bit, and I just seem to switch.
Yeah.
And it would be really good to be able to
have
access both. To both all the time.
Well, I think we can grow our brains, and our brains are very plastic,
I'm sure
and
can.
That we can do anything we want. So it's just a question of just allowing yourself to focus on it, I think, and it would be easy to do. But I think in the meanwhile, it does have a function for our better growth and learning as humans, because the man, after all, in historical times or prehistorical times, would go out in a linear fashion to go out on the hunt or whatever it was that they were doing, or to build a structure or to accomplish some sort of task. And the woman, in the meanwhile, like, for instance, in contemporary society, she's thinking, oh, Johnny's on his trike and he's getting really near the road, and Susie's hand is kind of near that electrical socket. I better keep an eye on that. And meanwhile, I'm stirring supper on the stove. So I think it works really well to have the sort of broader view in one of the genders and the more on-task view in the other gender.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a nice thing to have both perspectives, especially in a household together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So then in terms of leadership, that broader view is also very helpful. Many people know that the Iroquois people of this land here had cultural traditions of government and leadership that were really effective, and that some of these were utilized and also influenced our Articles of Confederation and the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution of the United States. But it's not very widely known that many of those leaders were females, because, you know, if you get a name like Chief, you know, Ikalakaumuka, you know, you don't really know, is that a male name or a female name? And so the signers, the people who contributed, you couldn't really tell. And also, too, in those First Nation groups of peoples, especially the cultural leaders of the time, were feminine, were female.
Oh, I had no idea. It's completely new information to me.
Isn't that lovely?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so, and then also, too, I think that natural people in a natural setting tend to act in natural ways. And I think that our First Nation, when I think of our First Nation peoples sitting in governmental council, we tend to think of them as sitting in a circle. Now, it might be a male circle, or it might be a female circle, or it might be a communal circle where they're sitting together and children are there as well. But they generally tended to sit in a circle, which is a great way to, which is why in the women's spirituality movement, we meet in circles, because it really shows that, you know, we are having that attempt to honor all voices. And maybe you could show that next slide there with Joseph Campbell.
Certainly.
He said in one of his PBS specials that Frank and I listened to, and I loved this, he said that he was forced by his female students at Sarah Lawrence College, where he was teaching, again and again, they really made him realize that he must consider the feminine perspective. And that always came in the form of what he referred to as a very simple question, which was, what does this mean to life? That's what his female students were constantly bringing up to him in his face. Sarah Lawrence College was a college for girls, and he was teaching mythology there. And they wanted to know the answer to that. What does this have to do with life? And I like to think of the birds and the trees as a great example for us, for our lives. So there's the birds and the trees, and the female birds, they're, you know, mostly sitting on the nest. They're tending to the eggs. Now, the male will come and sit the nest sometime, but mostly he's out tending to acquisition of bugs and things and protecting that particular tree and keeping other birds away. He's a very busy guy. And so is the woman. It's the female. She's very busy, too. And it's all well and good. But the problem lies in that for a long time now in our current history, women have been excluded from government and from divinity, sadly, in our religious traditions. And so the decision-making, the culture-creating aspects of the world have not had that female voice. They've not had that question, what does this mean to life? And so for the last several thousand years, divinity has been pictured as a human man in most of the world. But there were some really great books that have come out in the last 20 years. One of them is When God Was a Woman by Merlin Stone. Really talks about that earlier time that I was referring to earlier in the program tonight, where, you know, it's like, were they dancing girls or were they goddesses? Well, I think they were goddesses. And opening up to the feminine gender in divinity really opened my eyes in my own life. And another couple of books that I'd like to mention are by Jean Shinoda Bolen. She's an MD and a wonderful speaker and a great writer. She wrote The Millionth Circle, which is a beautiful little book on women's spirituality movement and being in circle together. Her first book that was a big hit for me, her first book that I read was Goddesses in Every Woman. And then later she came out with Goddesses in Older Women. And we've done a lot of studies with these books in my women's circle where we have found commonalities in our own personalities with those divinities in ceremony, actually embodying the goddesses of your choice. It's a wonderful thing to do in a women's circle. And it helps us to see the divine in each other and in ourselves. So, for instance, you know, I have a lot of strong Demeter energy. She was the mother goddess of abundance. And I also have the Hecate in energy, where she's standing at the crossroads. You have a choice, and you can look at different perspectives. She's also the one who's a little bit, has the all-seeing ability. And then Sophia, the mystical, spiritual one. So I have acted out those characters in my women's circles with the other women. And it's a wonderful way for us to reclaim our divine feminine from within.
Oh, that sounds absolutely wonderful. Yeah, I've often, you know, felt, I guess, not necessarily with the goddesses there, but maybe with some of the gods, something similar. And then there's the sense that when there's a multitude of them, there's the opportunity of identifying in so many more different ways.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's great, Tony. Yeah, so with women having been left out of religion and government, both of which create our culture, we've been crippled, I feel, in our culture, with half of our needed perspective missing. And it's a very critical perspective, that perspective of what does this mean to life. So women rising in their feminine power, I think, is very timely because, like the addict, or the, you know, alcoholic or whatever, we are just about to hit bottom here, if we haven't already. And we've got some very serious problems going on in our world as a result of this perspective missing. We've got 1% of the world's population owning 99% of the wealth. That huge disparity of wealth issue is even greater than it was in old Europe when the kings and queens were owning so much wealth. At that time, they owned estimated about 93% of the wealth.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's got worse. It's hard to believe.
I know. It is hard to believe.
Well, I know in the last couple of decades, it seems to, well, especially this last decade, it seems to have got a lot worse.
Yes, it really has in this last decade. And it's almost like you could almost use the analogy of a cancer where it's really taking all of the body's resources to create its own bigger cells.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a startling thought, but it's not too far off the mark. And then, you know, we've got the Amazon jungle, which is basically the lungs of the planet, and we're just mowing it down. I've gone on Google Earth and looked. It's just shocking to see how much of it has been converted into barren wasteland and desert. We've got the polar ice caps melting, vast extinctions across the globe. Then there's that problem of glacial water melt, rising of the oceans, the sea level, not to mention things like entire populations like the city of Cusco in Peru, 300,000 people all living on the glacial water melt, all of their water needs coming from that glacier, which is getting smaller and smaller and smaller and nearly disappearing. So we're in a real pickle here, and it's getting hotter. We've got ozone thinning layers, you know, in places. We've got fracking going on across the nation. We've got grabs for water, drinking water, GMOs, defense spending, soil erosion, air pollution, peak oil, you name it. It's just all there. And these are the repercussions, I feel, of that missing women's perspective. All of life is left in the lurch there. So women reclaiming their worth and their personal power, I feel, is vitally important, and that's what the women's spirituality movement is doing. It's awakening women's hearts and voices and values and personal power. You know, my dear friend one day came over with a CD. She was hosting a radio show of music at the local university here. And she brought over this CD of this young man who sang this one refrain over and over again as he accompanied himself on his guitar. And she put it on, and after a few minutes, I realized I just had to sit down and listen. And after maybe 10 minutes of listening, I found myself on my knees on the floor just weeping because his song was this. It goes, women of the world, take over, because if you don't, the world will come to an end, and it won't take long. And he just sang it again and again, and I thought, oh, my God, you know, is this really a good, strong point? And, of course, he's a young man, so he used the words take over because that's kind of like, you know, in our culture, what those words mean is for somebody to stand up and take control. And that's not really women's way. Women are a little more yin, you know, a little more receptive. So we're close. I get the point, though. You know, the idea here is that we've got to have women's voice. Mm-hmm. We need to really embrace that.
So, Josephine, then, can I ask, I mean, what would you recommend any men that want to support, you know, women claiming their power, standing up for a different, you know, a more feminine perspective?
Oh, well, Frank is like the most shining example of that of all. You know, just love your woman. Just appreciate her. Just see her beauty. Encourage what she would love to do. Help her to carve away some time from her tasks of child rearing and caring for the family so that she has an opportunity to do that. And I think you do that in a really wonderful way too, Tony. I've noticed you in your relationship with your beautiful wife, my darling friend Chloe.
There's certainly room for improvement.
Yeah, but it's good. And the more that we can do that for each other, and Frank and I like to consider each other president of each other's fan club. We really do try to support each other and love each other in as many ways as we can. And it makes a big difference. Yeah, so it's also interesting to note that the ancient calendars of the world have all predicted this time. That makes me feel like we're in good hands.
Mm-hmm.
So the Mayan calendar, the Vedic calendar, the Toltec, the Druidic, the Aztec calendar, even the Egyptian calendars, all noted what is now known as, currently, the precession of the equinoxes. And that particular alignment in the sky only happens every 26,000 years. That's a long time.
It is a long time.
And it actually happened on, many people believe that the actual event took place on December 2010, where we had that winter solstice, which on the winter solstice there was the full lunar eclipse. I don't know if you remember that here.
Mm-hmm.
The moon shone red. It was just astounding. It went dark and then it went red, like a deep dark red. And then it slowly came back again. It happened at about 11 o'clock at night on that winter solstice. And what happened right then was the Earth aligned with the moon and the sun all on the same plane, like a big pancake in the sky. And you know how these solar bodies, how they move? They move in a flat plate shape. It's not like they're all spinning around like a circle. They're more in a pancake. And then that big pancake in the sky also came into alignment with that plate of our solar system. So all of the planets that circle our sun, they were all gathered into that same alignment there. And then our solar system's giant pancake aligned with the even bigger pancake of our galaxy, the Milky Way, which is an astounding thing to have all of those things all lined up at the same time. And that is the alignment that's known as the precession of the equinoxes that only happens every 26,000 years. And the creators of these ancient calendars felt that this time was not the end of the world. They didn't feel that at all, but they felt that it heralded a new way in which we humans would view the world. I think that's such a significant difference. It's not, it's the end of the former way of viewing the world, but it's a new way of viewing the world.
Yeah, I mean, I'm aware of that. A lot of people were talking at the time, is this the end of everything?
Yeah.
And, it doesn't really make sense, does it, really? Because the end of something is the beginning of something else, always.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You've got to close one door to walk through another, you know?
You do.
And so this alignment naturally takes time to swing into position, and then, of course, it takes time to swing back out of position again, and it's about a 36-year time. So we were halfway. We were right in the middle point in 2010. We had gone already swung in halfway. We'd made it to that middle point, and now we're swinging out, so the other half of that 36 years. So nearly 40 years' time. So I find it very interesting to note that over the last 20 years, we've had some really significant world changes. For instance, South America went from having dictators in all of her countries to having presidents in all but one. And apartheid fell after all those many years. And we have a friend that was working for 20 years, you know, day in and day out to help apartheid fall. And she shared with us a story that she was just feeling so hopeless, like after 20 years of this, that it just was never going to happen. And she really almost just gave up, just about gave up. And then she said that she was working at her desk and she heard it announced on the radio that apartheid had fallen. And she just couldn't believe it because she was right in the thick of it and she had no clue. And there it went, poof, gone.
Yeah, I can remember that. I mean, I mean, it's a big part of my growing up, the anti-apartheid movement in Great Britain.
Yeah.
And, you know, demonstrations and boycotts and things. And
yeah.
And it did seem for a while that, you know, this is just never going to change.
Yeah.
You know, and then, bang.
All of a sudden.
In an instant.
It was gone.
Yeah, it was the same with the Berlin Wall, wasn't it?
Yes.
It seemed like it would never, never fall. And then one day, boom.
Boom.
It was over.
Wasn't that astounding?
Mm-hmm.
And I loved the way that Berlin Wall came down. It was like all of a sudden a couple of security guards on the wall just decided, you know what, we're not going to kill anybody if they come up here and try to knock this thing down. We're just not going to do it. And, you know, the thing took hold and people just started taking it down and somehow everybody just thought, okay, fine. And then also China opened her doors in peace, which is so wonderful. People now travel and enjoy, you know, going over to China and seeing her beauty. And then this I really love. It doesn't apply to all corporations, but it's interesting to me to note that, you know, war is just really not so very good for corporate world. You know, it kind of messes with their infrastructure. And so that gives me hope that we might even be stepping into a time where we move beyond war.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, perhaps you can show our next slide. This is one thing that I'm very, very proud of. In 1990, I received the Beyond War Award for my work as a with the Earth Day movement. It was just on a local level, but still, I have that proudly displayed in my healing room because that's a wonderful thing to be able to, you know, put my name to and to put my energy to. We can reach a world beyond war.
Yeah, wouldn't it be, in thinking of what you were just saying there, Josephine, wouldn't it be so good if it was not possible to profit from wars?
Oh, my God, yes.
Yeah.
It would be great.
That would be so good.
So, you know, let's pray for that time. Let's see that coming soon. So I think that a big influence in all of this was in the 60s when we did our space exploration and the astronauts got up into space and they took those photographs of the Earth from space, you know, our beautiful little planet floating out there in the middle of nowhere. And we began to see the Earth with a majestic beauty that was really worthy of our love. And I think that at that point we grew psychologically as a species beyond that babe at the breast ideology, that infancy where we have no concept of the mother and her needs, we just know about our needs. But when we reflect it on and see the Earth, we see that, you know, it's she who gives us life. And I feel that humanity is moving out of that infancy and into an adult relationship with our planet and with ourselves. And we're learning, what do you learn when you're an adult? You learn how to share. You know, that's one of the things, the stages we go to be 5 years old. Okay, learn how to share.
Yeah, well, hopefully you learn it before you get to being an adult. I know not everyone does.
Yeah, yeah.
Hopefully you do.
You do, and you learn how to care for and how to love each other. And I think that when we mature, we also find our autonomy, our own individual nation, our nature, our individuation. And we can really step into what the French call the joie de vivre, the joy of living. And it's our reason for being. It's our purpose. And it brings us that unstoppable joy of being, and it's our life rising up within ourselves. And so I like to think of this next period of in our human history of really coming to honor and cherish all of life as the feminine value and the feminine principle, and also right alongside of the male values of acquisition and protection and all the other good things that happen, but in a partnership way. And, of course, one of the beautiful ways that we do this, that we allow that feminine to rise up in us, is by honoring ourselves and each other in that circle of sharing in equality, very happy and joyous. And, you know, I've heard it said, and I think this is such a wonderful little saying, that a joyous woman controls the energy of the universe. And, you know, you think about the happy mother cooing and chortling at the baby. The joyous woman is our first experience of what we really desire. Joy is deeply, deeply attractive to us. And we all want to sip from that nectar. And I love it, too, that a joyous woman really turns heads. You know, it doesn't matter what her body type is or her age. A joyous woman walks into the room and everybody is interested in her. It's just, you know, it's just only natural for us. And another thing that's great about our women's circles, because we really do learn how to step into our joy, and because power that we are gaining in our women's circles is not the false power of power over another. It's the true power that rises up as we step into our own being, as we step into our autonomy, as we step into our life's purpose and why we're here. And so because we're doing that in our women's circles, of course, laughter is not absent from those circles. You know, a woman who is standing in her power is happy. She loves herself, and it's all about love, after all. You know, she's going to love the guy who's working across the road. And those are the two questions that are asked, I understand, from some of those who've had near-death experiences at the end of our life, is how have you loved, and how could you love more? And that's what our women's empowerment is all about. It's about that personal power. It's about learning how to love. It's about learning how to accept ourselves first and then love ourselves. And when we come from that place of loving ourselves, of course, we can love everyone, which is really great. And our purpose brings us right into love and joy.
Wow, that sounds absolutely fantastic.
I can
see why you belong to more than one women's circle.
Absolutely. It is fantastic.
So I have one question. I mean,
yes.
With the idea of, you know, everyone being equal in a women's circle,
mm-hmm.
Does anyone take a leadership role at times, or does it move around?
Oh,
how
yes.
does that work?
Yes, we just take turns often, you know, mm-hmm. so just depends. Sometimes, you know, all circles are different. There are no rules in women's spirituality movement. Anything goes, you know, whatever you want to do. And so what's most common, though, is that women will take turns. So it might be that we all meet at the same place every time, but somebody else will lead a sort of program. Sometimes women's circles have a more educational focus. Sometimes they have a more ceremonial focus. Sometimes they even have a slightly craft focus. You know, it can just be whatever feels right and good to the women who are getting together and what their interests are. You know, I consider my dream groups circles to be women's circles because we're usually meeting in circles of women to discuss our dreams because women dream differently from men. But I could certainly see a dream group with men included, of course, just as I can see a spirituality circle with men included. And I do have one, quote, woman's circle who does have men that attend regularly. So it's not really a woman's circle. It's a men and women's spirituality circle. And that's a really lovely thing, too. So it just really depends on, and a lot of times it's like somebody will just like popcorn, you know, oh, I'm inspired to do this. Oh, mm-hmm. And then next month, I'm inspired to do this. Mm-hmm. And so they just contact each other. Maybe they have, you know, emails. So there, and then a lot of times, too, in a particular women's circle, there might be one woman who's sort of orchestrating or slightly leading, but she may enlist 5 or 6 or 7 other women to have a little segment that they do. So one woman might lead a meditation, another woman might sing a song, another woman might talk about the aspects of the goddess that are pertinent to this particular holiday that they're celebrating, or whatever. So there can be many active participants, and often everyone participates a little bit in some sort of personal sharing about the experience from the body of the ceremony.
Oh, well, thank you for that, Josephine. But I had a question that was going through my mind as you were describing those wonderful women's circles, which is, for any of our listeners who aren't currently in a women's circle who might want to be, what would they do? How do you join a circle?
Well, you know, the very first women's circle that I was ever in happened very spontaneously. I think it was in, it must have been 1990, I think. And I was had gotten together with a group of activists. We were working on some issues. I think it was a sexual harassment issue that happened in our community government that was pretty profound and really a nasty situation. And after the meeting was over, we were just sort of lingering and talking and laughing and, you know, not really thinking too much of anything. And somehow we wandered out into the kitchen. And we happened to notice through the back kitchen door that the full moon was just shining so beautifully right above the tops of the trees. And the moonlight was just, you know, coming in the window. We thought, let's turn off all the lights and look at the moon. And it was in the wintertime, so it was a little too cold to go outside. But we turned off all the lights, and there was that moonlight just streaming right in, right by this little fruit bowl area that I have right in the kitchen. And I just sort of spontaneously cleared off some of the stuff that had been accumulating there. I think we got a notepad, you know, and whatever, 2 or 3 pens. And I just put down a little cloth napkin, and I think we set a couple of the pieces of fruit on there to kind of act like a little altar. And then we just moved into some prayer and some positive affirmations about what we were hoping to accomplish in the world, in helping women to, you know, really stand in their truth and not have to experience some of these, you know, situations that sometimes happens to women where they are oppressed. And that was my very first women's meeting, women's mm-hmm. spirituality circle meeting. And one of the gals who was there that evening was inspired by it very deeply, and she decided to, she was working at the local Coalesce bookstore, you know, our wonderful local owned bookstores are mm-hmm. so fabulous, and thank God we've got to support them all whenever we can. And so our Coalesce bookstore there has this beautiful garden chapel that its owner, Lina, had created years ago, and she was working at the bookstore, and she spoke with Lina about getting that chapel once a month in the evenings, because it's rarely used in the evenings, and sure, that was fine, you know. She was going to be locking up the bookstore anyway, and so we did. So we started meeting and had a back entrance, and it took off like wildfire. Before we knew it, there were 20, 30 women coming, and we would do grieving rituals or honor the, you know, the various solstices and equinoxes, and every month there was something different, and she was sort of our high priestess, as it were. She would always have something planned, and she would send out these nice invitations, and we would all make a little donation to the chapel to pay for the rental of the facility, which was very small. The local, you know, bookstore owner really gave it to us at a great deal. So, and it was wonderful. And then as the years went on, we suddenly, that group decided to start meeting in people's homes for whatever reason it was. And that was a great thing, too. And I remember this one time when I think there were 16 of us who showed up at this one woman's home, and her her home was very small. It was a very, very tiny place behind a main house. It was really hardly bigger than a playhouse. I mean, it was a dinky little spot. It was basically one room with a little kitchen, and I think she had a little outdoor facility for her commode. And we all just piled in there, and we all sat, and I think she had a little tiny sofa and a little tiny chair and a little tiny bed, and we all just scooted in there and put pillows around, and some of us sat on each other's laps, and some of us sat on the floor. And it really taught me that, you know, there are no rules, and it's always the perfect amount of people who come, and it's never too tight, and you don't have to worry about any of that, because the goddess and the divine just takes care of all of that. And we had a fabulous time in that little tiny house with that particular ritual.
Mm.
But another way that, you know, you can start is, of course, just ask around amongst your friends and just say, is anybody interested in this? I'd love to start meeting regularly and honor some of the solstices and equinoxes, or do a full moon every month, or do a new moon every month, or whatever it is. And it's a very easy thing to do. And you can put up notices at your local healthy food store on the bulletin board or at the yoga center. You know, you're going to get some takers. I've formed a number of them myself, you know, and sometimes women's circles will last for years and years and years. One circle I'm in is going on 20 years. And actually, two of them, I think, are pretty long-term like that. Another one is probably going on 30 years. I think that's the
wow.
one with the men and women in it. So it's not technically a women's circle, but it's kind of based on that same sort of format, that same spirituality. And then, you know, there's others that I've been in where they only lasted a couple of years for whatever reason. You know, you might have a mother, maiden, crone one where there's young women and, you know, middle-aged women and older women. Or you might just have a crone circle where it's all just older women for that, you know, deep wisdom. Or it might just be a maiden circle where it's all young girls who, you know, different stages of our lives, we have different interests. And so it's nice to form circles that match those. Yeah, thanks for asking.
Okay.
So it's pretty easy to do, basically.
Great.
Yeah, and maybe you can show that next slide then. This is the Dalai Lama. And one time he was asked by a reporter, what one thing do you think would change the world? And the Dalai Lama, without skipping a beat, immediately replied, American women. And I thought at first, when I first heard that, really? What's the deal with American women? You know, I really didn't quite get it. But I think that because we do have that separation of church and state, we don't have to fight both church and government to stand in our power, like as happens in so many nations of the world. And that makes the ability to rise up publicly and openly much more difficult. But also, too, American women have this really unique situation where it's something like we're responsible for something like 86% of the purchases that happen in this nation. And so when a husband is going to buy a new car, he usually runs it by his wife. Honey, what do you think? And she's like, no, not that one. Or, yeah, sure, that's great. Let's get that. Or whatever. You know, she buys his clothes. She's doing all the grocery shopping. She's usually in control of that aspect. And when you look at our world today and where a lot of the power lies, this is sort of the power over, it's in the financial realm. And with women already holding the purse strings, I like to say that we women already hold the power.
Mm-hmm.
And when we really wake up to this, I think that things are going to change really fast, and they already are. For instance, it wasn't too long ago that fair trade chocolate was new on the market. We have some friends who opened up a chocolate shop, Mama Ganache, my dear friends Tom and Eve, and they were selling fair trade chocolate because the chocolate that comes out of the Ivory Coast is largely grown and fermented and harvested by child slave labor. And, of course, the reason for that is because of poverty. The chocolate farmers are paid less now than they were in 1997, which is hard to believe. And so they do what they have to do to try to support their families, and so child slave labor gets enforced. It happens over there. It's really a huge shame. Another area that came into our awareness as American women consumers was that a lot of slave labor was happening out of China. A lot of those really beautiful fine textiles were made in slave labor conditions. And then, of course, now coming more contemporarily into our view is the situation with sweatshops in the Los Angeles area. Some of the big metropolises have sewing, you know, are sewing clothes for big name sports groups or whatever that are sewn with people who are basically kept in indentured servitude. And so as we wake up to this, we are going to make different choices. We already have begun to. You don't see those little stickers on a lot of things that were, quote, made in China anymore. Instead, you have a barcode, and you can look at the barcode. And there's information on the Internet about which barcodes represent items that are made in China. So it's easy for us to begin to really put our dollars where our hearts are.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you can show that next slide now. I love this quote by Pema Chodron. She's the Buddhist nun. And she says, "We don't set out to save the world. We set out to wonder how other people are doing and to reflect on how our actions affect other people." That's really it in a nutshell.
Mm-hmm.
And then one day I was surfing along on the Internet there, and I came across a blog by this woman who was a marine biologist. She was a female woman. And she was blogging about the, you know, wonders of the ocean in northern Vancouver Island. And what she was studying most extensively was the killer whales. And the killer whale pods, those orcas, they have a really similar lifespan to us humans. They become able to reproduce at about the same year that we do as humans, about age 12. And they continue until around age 45. And then, just like us, they live until about 80 years of age. And those elder females in those orca pods, they tend to lead, and they teach the rest of the pod, you know, where the good stuff is and where to go, and we go here now and we come back there. And it's not such a, you know, real dominating thing. It's just sort of like, maybe we should go over here. This is a good spot. Oh, yeah, that's great. It's really good over here. And there are three large mammals that have a similar situation, and the other two are elephants and humans. We all are very long-lived. We begin to reproduce or be capable of reproduction in the early teens or 12 or 15 years or so. And then we have these really long lives, and we stop our reproductive ability midway through that, and we live longer than our reproductive age. That's kind of uncommon in the animal kingdom. Usually animals will reproduce right into the end of their life, like horses. You can still breed a mare and produce a foal when the mare is quite in her senior age, like 22 or so, if she's been a brood mare her whole life. A little dangerous, maybe, for the horse and the foal, but still they're capable. And we know, too, that the elephants tend to be matrifocal cultures. They tend to lead the group. And so that begs the question, why not humans?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we humans are certainly capable of sharing and leadership, and women, when we can be, you know, true to who we are, we meet together with other women, and, you know, it's an interesting thing, too, is that it takes 51% of women present for women to begin to bring women's values to the table. So women that are commonly in government who are in less than a 51% representation of the feminine in the governmental situation, it's very difficult for them to act like a woman. They tend to act more masculine in their nature. But as we build our confidence in our women's circles, or in our feminine values, we can begin to bring them forward. So women's values come forward readily at the table, of the women's circle. And, you know, our women's circles tend to focus on interconnectedness with each other and with all of life. And, of course, that interconnectedness is the basis of our psychic ability. And women's circles often utilize intuitive or psychic skills. And again, there's no rules, so women's circles can be very, very different. But I find that, you know, often the body of a ceremony might include something like, commonly in my women's circles, communicating with plants or with rocks or doing scrying like crystal ball gazing or geomancy, where you're doing intuitive gazing, looking out over the earth, or studying the healing properties of stones or making gem elixirs or celebrating the earth and all of life, or celebrating the seasons, or dreaming the world. Dreaming a new world into being is one that I love doing. It really involves the imagination and vision center and helps us to develop our psychic ability. And here, you know, we're really nurturing and supporting each other. And sometimes you'll have women's circles that are honoring things like menarch, the first period that a young woman might have, or menopause. You can have crone ceremonies to really honor that coming into the crone time. Or, like I mentioned, the full moon or the new moon, or even the wheel of the year, which is one of my circles that I'm in, is a wonderful circle that celebrates the wheel of the year. Maybe you can show that last slide. I think we have just enough time to jump into this.
Just about.
And I recommend a couple of really wonderful books. Excuse me. One is called Casting the Circle by Diane Stein, and another one is called Women's Rituals by Barbara Walker. And in there, so this slide that Frank prepared for us, you usually start with the midwinter solstice, which is December 21st. And then if you were to draw inside that circle, if you were to draw an equidistant cross, which is the old symbol, which points to the four directions and has been used in medicine wheels, or else it is used to describe the solstices and the equinoxes. So at each of the points where that equidistant cross touches the circle, you'll have like the summer solstice, maybe the winter solstice would, say, be at the top of the circle, and the summer solstice would be at the bottom of the circle. And then to the left and the right of the circle, at the, where that equidistant cross touches, you'd have the equinoxes, the spring or vernal equinox, and then the autumnal or fall equinox. And then if you were to, that's a pie now cut into four pieces. If you were to cut those four pieces in half again, you'd have another cross on a diagonal in there. And those are called the cross-quarter holidays. And these are the ones that come in between each of those solstices or equinoxes. So between the winter solstice and the spring equinox, you have Candlemas, which is on February 1st. And in between the spring equinox and the midsummer solstice, you have Beltane, the lusty month of May. And then in between the midsummer solstice and the autumnal or fall equinox, you have Lammas, which is the holiday of breaking the bread, the first harvest. And then in between the autumnal or the fall equinox and the winter solstice, you have Samhain, or Halloween. And so these can be looked at not only as a circle of solstices and equinoxes and cross-quarter holidays, but you can also look at it like the arc of a life. So the babe is born in midwinter in the solstice, or the seed rises up out of the ground, if you're looking at it, at the analogy of a plant. And then come Candlemas, the sprout is up, or the babe is getting named or picking its first dedication ceremony. At the vernal equinox, the spring equinox, that's a little child running around, having fun, learning, education time. Come Beltane, the second cross-quarter holiday, we're into teenager years and lots of interest in procreation and coupling up. Then in midsummer, we've got the adult time, the parenting. Then right after that at Lammas, the harvest of the first bread, starting to enter into the mature years. Then at the autumnal or fall equinox, the seed is getting, the plant has ripened, the seed is ready to drop from the plant, or the body is getting ready to drop, reached into the elder years. And then there's that time at Samhain where it does drop, and we're the Halloween time, the dying time of the year. And we look at that as that sort of, it's not really death, it's a time of quiescence, ready for the rebirth again in the midwinter solstice with the babe all over again.
That's really fantastic, Josephine. But I'm sorry to tell you, we are getting very near the end of the show.
All right.
So perhaps I should just say that the link to next week's show can be found on Josephine's website at stepintomagic.com. I know you've got so much more to share with us. If you just simply click on the top menu for the radio. And if you have a question for us or would like to be included in our weekly newsletter, simply go to the contact page on Josephine's website. Again, that's stepintomagic.com. So, Josephine, at the risk of a positive answer, are there any parting words that you'd like to say?
Yes, there are.
I thought there would be.
Just a couple.
Good.
So, the basis of a ceremony has that purification at the beginning, and then usually there's sort of a description of intent. And then comes the body of the ceremony, which might be one of those things, like I mentioned, like communicating with plants or rocks or practicing our psychic skills or something, or honoring a menarch or a crone time. And then we often will sort of raise the cone of energy, usually with a song or something. And then perhaps we'll do a little meditation to ground ourselves, and then we might finish up with a celebratory meal. So there's lots of different circles have different focuses and different patterns or sayings or songs, but something is generally repeated each time for continuity. And there might be a talking stick, or that one circle might always use a talking stick for each individual when they're speaking, they're holding the stick. But there's usually always some sort of self-expression and some sort of use of the imagination, which is a wonderful thing. And then in closing, I'd just like to quickly squeeze in a little homework assignment.
Great.
And so what I'd like for all of you to do this week, if you get a chance, is to think about some of these wonderful archetypes of divinity, some of these gods and goddesses, and just see if you can't resonate with any one of them that you could kind of honor. It might be, you know, Shiva, the benevolent protector, the slayer of demons, or it might be Kuan Yin, the compassionate one, or Ganesha, the god of beginnings and remover of obstacles, or Bridget of the eternal flame. And just, you know, it's kind of fun to identify with these archetypes in a divine way. So just go ahead and let your feeling sense allow this perception of divinity within you to bring you an understanding about yourself this week at some point. So it'll be kind of a fun thing to do, to think of how you relate to the archetypes. It's a truly fun way for us to spend a little bit of time. And in closing, I'd like to thank you all very sincerely for giving me the gift of your time. And I'd like to finish with this little blessing, which was a gift from my friend Jana Massey. And it goes like this. As our gifts are given in love, they are received in love. And we honor their wise use and their increase for all concerned. And so it is.
Thank you so much for that, Josephine. As always, it's been a true pleasure talking with you this evening, and I'm sure that everyone listening has learned lots, I know I certainly have, about the importance of the women's spirituality movement. This has been show number SA-3.14, and if you've enjoyed the show, we really hope that you will tell your friends. We look forward to having all of you join us again next week when Josephine will be talking about energetic boundaries and how to keep them healthy and clear.
Tony and I wish you all insight, wisdom, and magic as you pursue the journey of inner knowing. I hold you all in light and in love. Thank you so much for listening. This is Josephine Lang. Until next week, good night.
Thank you.